Hey there, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and welcome to episode 151. Today I had the pleasure of interviewing fellow dietitian Crystal Savoy talking about IBS, gastrointestinal, that's the long word for GI, which you'll hear us say a lot, just all the GI things and intuitive eating. So Crystal is a weight-inclusive registered dietitian practicing from a health at every size lens and utilizing intuitive eating as a framework. She earned her master's in nutrition from Simmons University and completed their internship specializing in the treatment of eating disorders. She has a private practice in North Andover, Massachusetts, and works for several outpatient practices in the greater Boston area in addition to seeing clients virtually. Crystal specializes in nutrition therapy for food and body attunement. She has received advanced training in body image, intuitive eating, PCOS and women's health, and digestive concerns, particularly IBS and SIBO. Utilizing a therapeutic approach to nutrition counseling allows her to tailor treatment for each client based on their unique needs. She sees her main role as providing a safe and supportive space for clients to share their food and body image concerns. In her free time, Crystal likes to read, oil paint, go for walks or nap, hang out in her backyard outside, come up with new recipes, try new restaurants, and fill her house with plants. And she has a slight obsession with podcasts and collecting various resources to share with both clients and clinicians alike. She loves to connect with others in this community and share non-diet and recovery-focused material, so we'll be sure to link to her website and all her social in the show notes. We would love if you took a minute and, you know, screenshot or just shared something that you learned from today's episode. Tag us on Instagram at Crystal Savoy RD, at Fit Friends Happy Hour, and we'd just love to hear your thoughts. All right, get your helmets ready. On to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Crystal, welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour or Happy Monday. We're excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and chat with you.
We were just talking about how we're so glad that it's Monday because our brains are at least 90% here than they typically are come Thursday afternoon.
Yes, I'm glad you caught me on a Monday and not a Thursday or a Friday. Although given the current circumstances, I don't even know what my brain's operating at right now. I'm just like literally moment to moment at this point.
I feel like at the beginning I was saying day to day and then it's like hour by hour. It's like the time span, attention span, whatever is like shortened each day.
Yeah, I'm breaking it down to like literally moment to moment at this point.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Crystal? You know, why you became a dietitian and just what's your story?
I need to come up with a concise answer for this because every time someone asks me this, my brain goes in like five different directions. So I grew up north of Boston. Now I live about 30 miles north of Boston. And I didn't go or decide what I wanted to do in terms of a career until I was probably like 24, 25. So I essentially from high school went to college for about a year, like doing basic courses for business because I had in my brain, like eventually I want to do something, but I don't really necessarily want to have a boss. So I'll just do business. But I wasn't enjoying the coursework, just wasn't invested in it. So I ended up leaving that, working full time, and then didn't really like have a passion for anything until I was closer to mid 20s. So my first undergrad, or my only undergrad, is in nutrition, but that didn't happen until I was in my late 20s. And then I didn't become a dietitian until I was in what is now my 30s. So it's a little bit different than the typical, like I find either people go, you know, right into nutrition out of high school or, you know, have an undergrad in something else and then go back to become a dietitian. So I'm kind of like in the middle somewhere.
I love that. Well, but so we'll get into your dietitian story, but
just like take us back to when you took your freshman year. How was that to kind of make that decision to not go back to school? Because I feel like that's such a, you know, age where there's so many pressures, like you need to finish college, you have to have a degree. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think I'm the type of person that once I make a decision or I realize something, like, that's it. So I was kind of like, this isn't working. I'm wasting my parents' money. I need to kind of like pause and figure stuff out before I really go back and invest the time. So for me, it was a pretty like clear decision. Like, this isn't working. So I did my freshman year, stopped, started working right away, and basically worked essentially in customer service, various roles throughout that whole time up until when I finally decided to go back to school again. So it was just one of those things where you're like, this just isn't for me.
I love that though, because I think that says a lot about you, and we're going to hear, you know, more about your practice. And I think it just speaks a lot as an entrepreneur, right? And just having the confidence, and just, it's kind of a personality. You have to just be that decision maker and just do it.
Yeah. Just do it is kind of the theme. Yeah.
So you went back to school for nutrition. So what was kind of the rest of your path to that?
Yeah. So I went back. Initially my interest stemmed from learning how to cook and that whole process and being obsessed with all the cooking shows and really just a love for food, which transitioned. There was eventually some disordered behaviors that got like weaved in throughout. But initially the idea was like, I love food. I love making food. So let's learn more about this. Not really having like a clear understanding or idea of what that was going to look like. So I just kind of, I think I like Googled nutrition schools and found one in the area, started there, took some prereqs, ended up going to Simmons University, which is in Boston, and spent 5 years there between the undergrad and master's program, and then eventually did their internship program. So a total of 6 years there. And I think it was an odd mix of like not knowing what I was doing, being in the right place at the right time, and just things working out somehow.
So your internship, so tell us a little bit about how, because today we're going to talk a lot more about IBS and digestive issues and kind of how intuitive eating ties into that. So, you know, you mentioned that there was, of course, disordered behaviors, which, side note, any of my listeners listening, you're learning that dietitians are human too. And so many of us dietitians have a story similar to that. So how did kind of intuitive eating, how did you get exposed to that side of things?
Yeah. So trying to think timeline wise, I was, I believe in the year I did my master's, so the fifth year, I think it was a couple of things that happened all around the same time. So Marcy Evans is also in the area, in the Boston area. So I had seen her speak at one of the conferences that we had and was really interested from seeing that. At around the same time, I started listening to the Food Psych podcast. So I think those two things were huge factors for me, because once I kind of heard the two of them like speak about intuitive eating and eating disorders, I was kind of hooked from there. And I had previously worked as a diet tech at one of the eating disorder centers in the area, had a friend who I was very close with growing up that also had an eating disorder. So it was kind of all of these little things that contributed to that interest. And then from there, with being in the right place at the right time, Simmons had just started their eating disorders internship. The year I was doing my master's was the first year. So I was the second year of when they started it. So yeah, it was just this weird, like, right place, right time, like, realizing also at the same time, this is what I think I want to do. And I just happened to be in the perfect area to do that.
It's funny. I don't know if you can relate to this, but I heard somebody say this recently, and I thought it was so true. Talking about intuitive eating and, you know, this non-diet approach, for me, at least, it was almost like once you heard that message, you can't unhear it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely get that there are some people who, and I think it depends too on where you hear it from or how you mm-hmm. hear it, I guess I should say, mm-hmm. and also where you are in your journey. So certainly there are people that just aren't ready to hear that message or maybe just need to do some more learning. And I think at that point I had, you know, I refer to myself as a guinea pig of sorts in terms of like various types of eating. And I was just like sick of it. And once I heard that message, I was like, why have I not heard of this before?
You're like, it makes sense.
Exactly. It's like, how did I not figure this out by myself?
Also, side note for listeners, Marcy Evans, like hit pause, go look up Marcy Evans, go look up Food Psych, because those two women are essentially leaders kind of in this, you know, this anti-diet.
Totally.
I don't even want to say industry. It's a movement really is what yes. it is. So tell us a little bit more about what your experience was like working with eating disorders, because that's quite, you know, an area to jump right into, especially as a new soon to be dietitian.
Yeah. Well, what was good about the internship was the first semester, it was kind of broken into two semesters. So the first semester, we had a course where it was just like any master's course in terms of like, you know, meeting weekly and all that stuff. So we had a course with Marcy Evans and Lisa Pearl, where we learned all about eating disorders before even like going into our eating disorder rotations. So by the time I got to my first rotation, I had been, you know, doing research, learning from them before starting it, which I think was nice. Like I said, I had already worked at an eating disorder center, so I had some knowledge of what the environment was going to look like. And then what that involved was 3 months total of being at higher levels of care. So meaning I went to a facility that was inpatient, which is essentially the highest level of care where the patients are there 24/7. The one that I was at during my internship, some of the patients had tube feeds, so it was like people being monitored all the time. And then I went from there to a partial like day treatment program. And then from there, I went to outpatient, which is what we do, what I do now. And that last month, I spent half with Marcy, the other half with her colleague, Sarah, and finished the internship with that outpatient rotation, which was perfect ending to an internship.
Yeah. Well, thank you, first of all, for explaining kind of those different levels of care, because I think people don't necessarily understand kind of the spectrum of when we're talking about eating disorders, how there really is a full spectrum of care and kind of the treatment yeah. plan. So how did kind of your experience with your internship lead you to working with digestive disorders?
So I think it's now looking back, it makes total sense to me. I might not have initially thought so. And part of the puzzle is that I had an interest during my undergrad in integrative nutrition, which is involves a lot of GI disorders and treatment for GI disorders. So I had a background in these integrative solutions and also spent some time with an integrative RD during the beginning of the internship. So I kind of took what I felt resonated and what I felt made sense and left some of the other stuff that I felt was more restrictive. So I had some kind of knowledge going into working as a dietitian of digestive disorders and eating disorders. And then while I was interning with Marcy, I was reading some of the research on both GI stuff and eating disorders and the overlap. And then eventually, as an RD, did her course that she has on GI and eating disorders. So I think if you are in the eating disorder field, you will have clients that also have GI issues. They go pretty much hand in hand. There are certainly, you know, people that don't experience that, but the majority of the people that I have worked with have had some kind of digestive complaint along the way.
Explain, I want to rewind just a little bit. Explain sure. what is kind of considered functional, a functional dietitian and functional medicine, and how would you describe kind of that field?
Yeah, so I think when I think of that, it's more so alternative solutions to, you know, what a condition might be. So for example, with somebody who has IBS. The solution, unfortunately, usually involves some sort of elimination diet. It definitely involves many other things, but that's usually a big component. So that's one of the things I left behind. I took, you know, the knowledge of maybe some thinking about stress and the gut-brain connection and maybe potential supplements depending on the person, and kind of left the elimination piece behind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's kind of like your traditional, I guess, medicine, or people think of going to the doctor. A lot of times doctors will straight off the bat prescribe a medicine, or, you know, kind of this standard treatment, whereas functional medicine is a little bit more, I guess, alternative, I think is a good word to use. And so it sounds like you, Crystal, are kind of the sweet spot, right? Of like, let's
I try and be a
yeah, kind of being open. I imagine those as two ends of the spectrum. Right. And you kind of look at the total person, right? Let's look at the actual medical aspect, but also the person as a you know, mind, body, spirit. So explain to us a little bit more about, you know, what exactly is IBS, and walk us through how might someone get that diagnosis? Because we hear that term and that, you know, acronym thrown around all the time.
Yeah. So IBS stands for irritable bowel syndrome. And it's funny because I was listening to your PCOS episode and I was thinking it's essentially like, it's very similar in that it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So you can't have a specific test and someone says, okay, you have IBS. It's more a matter of ruling out other potential diagnoses or medical conditions that might be causing similar issues. So someone with IBS might be experiencing a variety of symptoms just depending on the person. The most common ones that I hear are, you know, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, maybe gas. It really just depends. Ideally, you would go to a GI doctor and they would do testing to rule out other potential causes. Now, sometimes that's not the case. I think it really is a matter of, at this point, I think it's probably the doctor based on, you know, the clients that I've had that have gone to a GI. Some of them have had all of the testing done and they've been given the diagnosis. Some of them have been given the diagnosis with no testing being done. So I think in that aspect, it kind of just depends on, you know, which GI doctor you see.
Yeah, like a process of elimination and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so kind of talking about what are your symptoms, you know, medical history, all of that stuff. And ideally, we're ruling out other causes. Although I will say in eating disorders, working with people who have eating disorders, there is some process of elimination that, you know, for example, constipation and bloating are two things that people are dealing with on a regular basis. That doesn't necessarily mean you have a medical condition. It could just be a result of, you know, behaviors or, you know, treatment, et cetera.
Can you explain a little bit about how, you know, an eating disorder can affect the gut, right? Like we're talking about constipation and just digestion overall. Yeah. I don't think people necessarily understand how those two go hand in hand. So can you describe maybe some of the things
that
your clients experience and don't make that connection until they see you?
Right. I'll start with constipation because I think like actual examples can be helpful for people to kind of picture in their mind what might be happening. So if you think about constipation, that could be caused by many different things. You don't necessarily have to have disordered eating or an eating disorder to experience constipation. That being said, I do find that in this population, constipation is very common. And the reason for that is that when we don't have enough energy coming into the body, our body has basically a survival mechanism built in. So it prioritizes certain functions over others. So certain things are going to shut down or just work at a slower pace to keep other things moving. So for example, our gut will slow down, or in women, we might notice that our periods either get wonky or disappear. And that's because the energy that is coming in is being shunted to vital organs like the brain, the heart, the lungs, essentially to keep us alive. But that also means that the body's like, okay, let's slow down these other things. And one thing that we see slow down is the gut, basically. So you might think like, oh, why am I so constipated? Why am I so, you know, bloated, et cetera? And it could be that there's just not enough energy coming in. So you have food stuck in the gut. It's not coming out. Things are just at a stop or at a working at a slower pace. Maybe, you know, your normal, let's just say 100% daily bowel movements, that would be your normal. Maybe you're working at, you know, 40%, 60%. I find it's really dependent on the person. Mm-hmm. And then another example would be bloating, which can be caused by so many different things. But one thing that comes up that I see in eating disorders a lot is even just what is normal bloating from eating, or maybe a little bit of gas from something that you ate. But because there's also this disordered eating and disordered thought process involved, and, you know, body image and whatnot, a normal bloating situation could feel like, oh my God, I'm so bloated. I look like I'm pregnant. I must have, you know, some sort of issue. Not to say that that like can't happen, or that that, you know, might not be happening, but just that in this population, these things can sometimes be tied to behaviors or the inherent nature of the eating disorder and not necessarily, you know, a digestive disorder.
That's so funny that you bring that up, because I actually had a friend reach out to me this weekend who's said to me, oh, hey, I know you're a dietitian, and I just had a question. You know, I'm wondering, because they took a gut test, like a consumer, you know, stool test, that you can buy, right? Because there's so many different tests out there. And I get this question all the time about, hey, should I take this food sensitivity test? I think I'm allergic and intolerant to this. And apparently the test came back and said, well, you are bloated from kale, basically all cruciferous vegetables, all leafy greens, Brussels sprouts. And so he said, hey, like, these foods are making me bloated and gassy, and like, do you have any alternatives to the foods? And I had to have this serious conversation of, listen, you maybe probably just ate a very large amount of Brussels sprouts and they made you gassy. And that is 100% normal. You do not have a tolerance, like, or an intolerance. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. You actually, your body's working great. So and speak to that.
Yes. It's so funny. I'm just thinking of like past situations where that's happened, where it's like, so weird. Like, my stomach was killing me. I had so much pain. And then I'm like, okay, so what, you know, tell me what your day looked like. And I ate a pound of like green beans and
that'll do it.
That's exactly it. It's like, yep, that'll do it. And again, not to say like there are those, definitely those instances where you're kind of left wondering like, what is going on with this person? And then there are other instances where it's kind of like pretty cut and dry, like, this is what's kind of impacting your symptoms, mm-hmm. which is nice, because you can kind of be like, okay, at least there's no mystery here. Right.
Right. How do you feel that our, you know, society kind of plays into these quote intolerances, and, you know, media, I feel like, telling us that everybody has a gluten sensitivity, everybody has XYZ.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I just feel for people that are having gut issues, because I can only imagine being in that place and seeing all of this stuff and just being totally confused. And I, you know, I forget the name of the company, I won't say it, but I've seen a commercial lately for like the at-home testing stuff, which might be what your friend was even talking about, where it's like, they send you back this list of foods that you're supposedly intolerant to. And, you know, they're not validated for actually diagnosing anything. Oftentimes the foods that come up highest on your, you know, these are the foods you should avoid, are actually the foods you're eating the most, which makes sense. But you're being told these are the things that are irritating you. So then you're like, now what am I going to eat? And if you find the wrong, you know, if you do a Google search for something, you might find, you know, do this elimination diet. Or if you follow somebody on Instagram, you might see something there. So I just think we're not just with this topic, but with all topics, kind of overwhelmed with information coming from all of these different sources and mixed mixed messages and all sorts of things. So yeah, it can certainly be confusing.
Right. And it really does make you feel for the person who truly does have something that's undiagnosed or maybe hasn't sought help yet, you know, and is getting all these conflicting messages from not credible sources. So you touched on elimination diets, right? And how that's a traditional treatment for digestive issues. How can this actually make matters worse?
Yeah. So it's interesting because of course, in somebody who already has disordered eating or an eating disorder, we can imagine how that might transpire with becoming even more restrictive. And it also impacts people who maybe have no previous history of disordered eating or an eating disorder, who go to the doctor and or dietitian or whoever and are told, you know, eliminate XYZ and see what happens, essentially. Now, hopefully that's not what happens and you are kind of guided in terms of how to reintroduce foods, which would be the ideal situation. But there are people who just, you know, Google what should I do and end up on a restrictive diet for, you know, months, years, instead of 2 to 4 weeks, or people who certainly I have heard many times, oh, I went to meet my GI doctor. They told me I have IBS and I just need to follow this diet. They hand me a piece of paper and send me on my way with no referral to a dietitian, no explanation of how to reintroduce foods. So again, I think it really depends on where you get the information from. And it's also important to note that in somebody with an active eating disorder, doing an elimination diet is contraindicated. So it's going to exacerbate symptoms when you have somebody who's already restricting, to then tell them, here's another food you can't eat or shouldn't eat, right?
Mm-hmm. It plays into these food rules. I just thought of, so my part-time job, I work in a hospital with inborn errors of metabolism. So PKU, right? They basically can't break down an amino acid. And so there's this new drug out there that allows them essentially to, it liberates their diet and allows them to eat protein. And so it's almost the opposite of, and very similar to what we see in disordered eating, right? Because we've got these patients who for years and years, you know, they're in their 20s and 30s and 40s who have been told, do not eat protein, do not eat meat. Like, you need to stay away from these for medical issues. And now we're saying, actually, you need to eat more protein. And they're scared. They're afraid of these
foods. Exactly.
Because it's the opposite of what they've been told and kind of these mixed messages. So what does this do on the mental side of things?
So in those who have an eating disorder, and this isn't necessarily because of the GI stuff, but we know that the majority of patients who have an eating disorder also have a comorbid diagnosis. So like anxiety or depression or something else like that. And in people with gut disorders like IBS, it's highly tied to anxiety, stress. Because really that in these particular patients, their gut brain access is like, maybe we're operating, you know, at, I don't know what to call it, like, I guess a quote unquote normal level. They're hypersensitive. So, you know, something we might not notice at all. This other person is like, oh my God, my stomach is killing me. I don't know what's wrong with me. And that could be just because, I mean, there's multiple factors, but one of the things could just be that hypersensitivity. So of course, it's a two-way street. So if you have anxiety or depression, that could be affecting things. But of course, if you're not feeling good and you have bloating and your stomach really hurts, or you're running to the bathroom, or you're worried that like, if you leave the house and need to use the restroom, like where am I going to be? What's going to happen? Of course, that's going to impact mental health as well. So it's definitely a two-way street.
How does that, right? So you take this non-diet kind of intuitive eating approach. You know, somebody listening to this is thinking, gosh, I've got all these, I feel so far from that. How can intuitive eating be challenging kind of while navigating GI issues? And is it possible to work on both at the same time?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think it depends on really, it's on an individual basis. And one thing I always keep in mind or tell people is that intuitive eating really is more than just hunger fullness or like, you know, thinking, what am I in the mood for eating? Although that's certainly a part of it, you know, there's 10 principles in total. So if you're working through a particular GI issue or trying to figure out what's going on, or even in eating disorder recovery, where maybe hunger fullness isn't that reliable and you need some kind of guidance and structure in the beginning, what other principles can we look at? And, you know, maybe we can focus on rejecting diet culture, which is, you know, in my opinion, it's number one for a reason. So we kind of want to start there anyway. So there are certainly other principles you can work on and learn about while you're trying to figure out the GI stuff. And really, that's just going to depend on where you are in your journey and, you know, your support system and how motivated you are and just so many things. So it really does look different for everyone. But I certainly think, like in, like you were saying, in your patients who had PKU or have it prior to being able to use the medication, I believe that you can use intuitive eating regardless of the diagnosis. It might just look a little bit different than somebody else.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, please don't hate me for interrupting today's episode, but I had to let you know that I did open back up the Reboot Bootcamp. I designed this online course specifically for those of you who aren't ready to make the investment in one-on-one coaching. However, you're ready to take action and test the waters to dive a little bit deeper with intuitive eating. This course is 10 weeks long, but it was designed for you to work at your own pace, whether it's visually by watching videos, listening to the audios just like you do a podcast, or jumping in on some live accountability calls with other women who are really in your shoes, experiencing the same struggles with food, exercise, and their body. My goal is to just empower you with the tools to help you feel successful and more confident in your own skin and stop measuring your success by the numbers on the scale. Now, because you're a fit friend, you know I take care of you. So if you go to katiehick.com/bootcamp, enter the registration code or discount code, registration code, whatever, code, Morse code, FFHH, that's going to get you $50 off the already coronavirus crisis discounted price. Oh, and if you're enjoying today's episode, would you do us a favor, screenshot and post it on Instagram and tag Fit Friends Happy Hour? We love you so much already, but we would freaking love you even more. I hope to see you in the Reboot Bootcamp, but for now, back to today's episode.
You mentioned support system. Why is a support system so important, you know, in eating disorder recovery, but also, you know, disordered eating? I think of the two, you know, depending on where somebody is in their journey, it can feel very isolating. So, you know, why is that support system important in this journey?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's very difficult to get through on your own. And as humans, we crave connection. We need connection. It's a huge part. I think we're all realizing this right now.
We're like, yeah, it's a human face today.
I know. I'm like, I get to look at a human. This is so exciting. I think we're all, I mean, I knew this already, but right now I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Like my mental health is very dependent upon like connection with other humans. So if you're going through something that is isolating, like an eating disorder, then it's going to be really hard to get through that and get to the other side without some kind of support. And that again looks different for everyone. That could be your treatment team. It could be your best friend. It could be a parent or a loved one. It could be, you know, the non-diet health at every size community. Support really just looks different for everyone. But I do think it's very important to not just recovery, but also mental health.
Do you have clients or can you think of a, you know, situation where maybe someone hasn't quite had the support and how, you know, because at least from my experience, you know, I have a lot of clients who don't really know how to explain this journey that they're on, right? And they find us dietitians and they go, oh my gosh, finally somebody I can talk to about food. And I've had all these emotions and, you know, feelings around food that a lot of people around me don't talk about or don't have, right? They're very black and white, whereas the people we work with tend to fall a lot in the gray. So have you had, so where am I going with that question? My question was, have you had clients who maybe haven't had that support system or are scared to talk about what they're going through? is it even possible, like, if with a eating disorder, if somebody's in treatment, like, is it possible for people to admit themselves, or what does that look like?
For treatment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, totally. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, some people seek it on their own. Some people have someone say, you know, hey, maybe you should get some help. There's no right or wrong way to seek support. I think if you're wondering, like, maybe I do have something going on, like, regardless of where you think you're at, it can't hurt to reach out to somebody, because more often than not, people end up thinking this isn't an issue, I'm totally fine. And then, you know, however long down the line, it becomes, you know, it's a downhill type thing. Like, it doesn't get better. It only gets worse until you can get that support. So I always say too, I don't expect, you know, my clients to be able to explain exactly how they're feeling or what they're struggling with to someone else, because it can be really hard to put into words. But to just be open, if you feel like you're in a safe environment, to be open with those people about what's going on. And, you know, maybe I'm in treatment, this is what I'm working on. And I always say too, we're recovering in a disordered culture. So that's a whole nother layer.
Yeah.
And I forget what your original question is. Now the brain energy is
really, yeah, I know.
This, dying on us.
It's so good. But I actually thought of another question. You know, you mentioned it's hard for us to talk about these things. And so what advice would you have to someone who's listening, who maybe has a friend or a loved one that they recognize, like, what they're doing and how they are acting around food and exercise is not normal and it is disordered? You know, what advice would you have to somebody to have that difficult conversation?
Yeah, I would say to just check in with them if you can and say, you know, hey, I've noticed XYZ. How are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? Just kind of get a sense of where they might be at. Now, if somebody is in their, you know, really in the disordered behaviors or eating disorder or whatever, they might not be able to hear it. But down the line, they might think, oh, I remember my friend telling me this was going on, or she had noticed this. And that kind of led me to think, like, maybe something is going on. So you might say something and then think, oh, I don't know. Like, was that the right thing to do? Like, or maybe even the person reacts in a way that's like, no, you're wrong. Everything's fine. But you don't know what happens after that. That could lead to them reaching out for help. So either way, in my opinion, it can't go wrong to at least kind of say, hey, I've noticed this. Like, if you need someone to talk to, let me know. Or, hey, I heard about this podcast that, you know, might be good to listen to. Or I just read this blog post that I found really helped me. Do you want to read it? Like, that kind of a thing.
I love that suggestion of coming from a place of just, are you okay? How are you feeling? Because you're not necessarily accusing them of, hey, you're doing this and this is not normal, but it's, I just noticed this.
Yeah.
How are you feeling with everything? And I think if we can ask those questions, especially at the time that we're recording this during COVID, that is not normal to hear. If anything, it's refreshing to hear somebody say, how are you? Genuinely ask how you're feeling.
Right. Exactly.
Crystal, so I had somebody on Instagram reach out and they asked, very general, how do you manage IBS? Where do you even start with that question? And it's broad, but I guess maybe what does that treatment plan look like, or how I'm thinking of, maybe somebody is going through what you've experienced and they're not finding management.
Mm-hmm.
What are tools to manage it on their own, or what is kind of the treatment they need to seek out?
So there are things that I kind of think of as like back to basics, like try this before even thinking of like maybe doing something a little bit more extreme, like an elimination diet. So things like making sure that you're chewing your food, which sounds silly, but literally, like, if you're the type of person that's busy, on the go, has kids, trying to work, and you're eating your meal in like 10 minutes or less, then that could be your starting point, is just, you know, trying your best. And I know this is hard in and of itself, just because of like the inherent nature of how we operate these days, but really taking the time to make sure you're chewing your food, because that's going to start the digestion process before anything even gets into your small intestine or stomach. So starting with something simple like that, thinking about like, am I drinking a lot of carbonated beverages? Am I chewing a lot of gum? Am I drinking through a straw? Like these things that maybe you're not thinking about when you think about digestion, but some people can't tolerate carbonated beverages. Some people can drink seltzer water all day long and feel totally fine. Other people have one carbonated beverage and they feel like crap. So it really depends. Something like coffee. Like some people can tolerate coffee just fine, have no issue. Another person might drink coffee and be in the bathroom 10 minutes later, which you kind of have to weigh your pros and cons with the coffee.
I think of the person who's like, oh, I've had so much anxiety lately, and they're drinking like a pot right. of coffee a day. All right, let's, like you said, back to the basics. Let's start at our baseline before we look at food. Because I think when it comes to making changes around food, that can be very overwhelming. So I love that. Let's look at just
everything
else first.
Let's turn the pot of coffee to a half a pot of coffee. Right. Or even just like, there are many, I kind of have, well, ideally you would see, in my opinion, a non-diet dietitian who has experience.
We're a little biased on that.
Right. A little biased on that because there are so many questions to ask and kind of look at your whole history before just saying, here, try this. And like, let's just see what happens. So I think it's really important to get a full assessment because like I said in the beginning, with something like constipation, two different people can have constipation for totally different reasons. So one thing that works for one person might exacerbate symptoms for the other person. It really just depends on what is causing the symptoms in the first place. And I think one thing that gets forgotten about quite often is the anxiety stress piece, because literally anxiety and stress could be causing every single symptom you're having. It could have zero to do with food. And that is something I think ends up happening quite often, is that we go to the elimination diet and never talk about stress and anxiety. And those symptoms will never go away. And it makes sense, right? Because an elimination diet sounds pretty straightforward to most people. Like, okay, I'll just, you know, cut XYZ out. I'll reintroduce stuff. We'll figure out what's going on. But if we say, let's talk about stress and anxiety and mental health, that's like a whole nother can of worms. So I do think when somebody comes to me with the GI stuff, of course, keeping in mind, are there disordered eating behaviors happening? Is this an eating disorder? Also, what is your stress and anxiety level like? Because that's a big deal when it comes to being able to digest your food.
How do you help your clients kind of make that connection? Because I've worked with women who don't have diagnoses, but do express like, yeah, I've had all this bloating, kind of those buzzwords I say. And once they start the intuitive eating process, they learn, oh, these are completely separate things, but they're exacerbating, you know, the more we can, intuitive eating is essentially this mind-body congruence, right? And so the more we can identify, we can, you know, start to feel the physicality of food. So how do you, as a non-diet dietitian, help clients make that connection?
Well, I think what you just said is exactly what the first step is getting in tune with what's happening and just literally having an awareness around like what is going on. So that might look like your only, I guess, goal for, you know, the first couple weeks is to think about what else was going on that day. What was my stress level like? Was I anxious? Did something happen? Did I have a hard conversation? Did I sleep for 3 hours? Did I sleep for 8 hours? Like, what did other stuff look like? Not just the food piece, but also what else was happening in your life? Because I think we miss out on a good bit of information if we're only like, okay, let's look at a recall. Yes, that's important from a dietitian's perspective, because like we said, you know, if you're eating a pound of Brussels sprouts or green beans, like, that, you know, impacts things, but what happened that day is also a very important question. So it's funny because I have had several clients now where they come back after a couple of weeks and say, it's so interesting. Like this happened. And I noticed that I was super stressed that day, or like that day that I had like all my stomach pain was the day that I was super anxious. And it's just, once you kind of like stop and ask yourself like, okay, I'm not feeling well. This is what's going on. What else happened? You start to kind of connect the dots. And if, of course, if we try the back to basic stuff, we're not connecting the dots, then we start to look at like what else might be going on. But I think it's important to just start with that stuff first.
Yeah. Back to the basics. Like you said, bringing awareness can be so, so powerful just to take inventory of everything else that's going on. Right. Because like you said, in the beginning, we're not just, it's not just food, you know, it's not just medicine. It's this whole spectrum of things. So you talked about how this connection of, you know, when we're eating certain things, how it makes us feel, it can also play into this mental piece. What are some of the challenges that you see with clients in terms of how they're feeling, right, in their stomach and their gut? How does that come about with body image? And do those two play hand in hand at all?
Oh, good question. As you were saying that, I thought of something I forgot to mention. So real quick, I wanted to mention that if you are eating a lot of products that are diet foods, so any food that's marketed to be lower calorie, it is likely that if you are having GI symptoms, that could be the cause of said GI symptoms, because those foods are processed to be lower calorie. Just wanted to throw that out there before I forget.
What is that's such a great point. I'm glad that you brought that up. What is it that's in the product? I mean, is it one certain ingredient, or, you know, what is it that in general that these quote diet foods, and can you give examples of what are quote diet foods?
Yeah. So I think of a food that's essentially processed to have less calories than it was intended to have. So a natural ice cream, whether that be dairy ice cream or even like a vegan ice cream or a non-dairy ice cream, like if you can't tolerate dairy, there are still, you know, like a coconut milk type ice cream might be fine, just kind of depends on the brand. But when I think of a diet food, I think of Halo Top.
Well, I've done
not offending anybody.
Do you know Brenna O'Malley, the Wellful?
Yep.
She was on the podcast. It's been a couple months now, but we literally had a whole podcast talking about Halo Top and
messaging. Oh, perfect. So, okay. So
no, you can't be offended here.
Refer to said podcast, because it's just basically what happens is they're trying to make the food taste sweeter, but have lower calories. And they use sugar alcohols, which are really irritating to the gut. So if you're someone who's already sensitive, you know, even in somebody with no stomach issues, they might eat that and be like, oh my God, my stomach's killing me. What I find is, one, these are people who already have a sensitive gut. Two, if your disordered brain is telling you, well, this is lower calorie, so I can eat the entire pint. Now you have this sugar alcohol that's in the ice cream or whatever you want to call it.
Fake ice cream, now, whatever it is, not ice cream.
Yeah. Now it's like you're getting a, you know, huge dose of that, when maybe if you just had regular ice cream or like a non-dairy ice cream, you might not have had that at all. So I think that that's definitely one thing to keep in mind.
I love that you brought that up, because I think that's so applicable. And I think so many women listening to this who have, you know, a history of disordered eating or, you know, have bought into that whole diet foods, have a moment in their life and where they, I think we don't think of diet foods, like in this day and age, diet food is trendy and it's sneaky.
Right.
And it's disguised. It's disguised as these like health foods and natural, and really it's still diet food.
Exactly. Yeah. Just buy the real stuff. You'll be happy.
And your stomach may not hurt as much. I love it.
Yeah. I think your original question was about the body image and like how that ties into the digestive piece.
Yes. So back to that, how do you find that, you know, we're talking about this mind-body connection, how do you find that body image plays a disorder from your clients who have GI issues, or is there really a difference that you see?
Yeah, I think there's totally an overlap And that might be because, for example, usually in somebody who has a negative body image, there's really a distrust in the body. So if you already have a negative body image and you're also experiencing all of these GI issues, that just exacerbates it because you're like, well, I can't even like eat my food without, you know, feeling normal, or like every time I eat, I feel sick. And it can really lead to this like distrust, like my body doesn't even have my back kind of a feeling, which totally makes sense. And then of course, if you are experiencing, you know, bloating, like that could also impact, especially if you have an eating disorder or body image issues and you're kind of already hyper-focusing on the body, then if you're having GI symptoms, that can really just like amp everything up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this distrust. How can I trust my body when it's making me feel horrible or the right way it does?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, so many good topics that we touched on today. And I'm so glad that you joined us, you know, for the podcast, because again, I just get so sick of hearing people saying that they have this issue or, you know, they're gluten, you know, X, Y, Z. And I think what it really boils down to is let's go back to basics, you know, learn to trust your body and seek help from an expert, because if you really feel like you have issues, find somebody who can actually help you versus just trying to do it on your own. Well, Crystal, it has been so fun having you on the podcast today. So before we wrap things up and tell everybody where to find you, a couple rapid fire questions, because you told me that you were really into some different episodes lately. And it's just, Corona is the time of like just self-care. So first I want to know, what is your favorite podcast that you're listening to right now?
Oh my God.
I say right now because I know it comes in waves.
I know. No, it really does. I definitely went through my food psych, plowing through every episode, which if you haven't, I highly recommend, but I've gone through them all. Actually, yours is my most recent favorite, not to be like,
oh, I did not pay her to say that. Thank you.
No, she did not pay me, but I was like, oh, another fun podcast for me to listen to. So yeah, yours is my current favorite to listen to. And other than that, I've actually been taking a little bit of a break because I have to think about like how much information can I handle right now. And I haven't really found like a podcast that I can listen to and just like let my mind shut off. Mm. So it's either like I'm in the mood to listen to it and I'm listening to it, or I'm literally not listening to like anything.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. I know exactly where you're coming from. I have like we said, short attention span lately. Okay. Second question. What's your favorite beverage right now?
Oh, definitely coffee. Yeah. I can't function right now without the coffee.
You and me both. Coffee all the way. That's why I'm like, don't drink a pot of coffee. I posted something on Instagram today that was like, Katie, you need to remember that like coffee is not water lately. Need to remind myself.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I have to also same reminder. Yep.
So sweet or salty?
Okay. So I'm I prefer both. However, if I have to choose, then salty.
Yes. What like chips, kind of chips over cookie?
Yes. But like, to give you an example, like a chocolate chip cookie with sea salt, like that's my jam. Like I want both.
I need both. Listen, my world, I get them both.
There's the intuitive eating cup. Like, I can't just give you a black and white answer ever. Like, I'm like, no, we have to combine them.
That is perfect. Okay. Last question. What is the best thing that's happened to you this week? And it's Monday, so you can use like past 7 days.
Does the sun count? Like when the sun comes out, I'm just like,
that's so sad, but yes, that counts 100%.
I mean, I've always been a sun person, but now I'm like, if I wake up and the sun is out, I'm just like, this is really going to make my day.
I couldn't agree more. And just so you know, in case you check the weather app, the sun is rising earlier and earlier each day. I noticed that yesterday. That and I thought that is giving me motivation for the week. So I love it. I love it. So what is the best way for our listeners to find you? And also tell us about your body image course that you have, because I know you just released that and that's super exciting.
Yes. You can find everything at crystalsavoyrd.com. And then all social media stuff is at crystalsavoyrd. And then the body image course you can find on the website. That came out in January. And it's an e-course that is about, I want to say 2.5 to 3 hours long of kind of going through like what I would talk to clients about, like probably interspersed throughout different sessions, but all condensed and put into order with various worksheets and handouts, a list of resources, just to learn more about body image, because it's something, as I was kind of going along, realized this is a really important piece, but oftentimes we're focusing so much on other things that it kind of just gets put off to the side. And this is something that you could, you know, if you're along in your intuitive eating journey thinking this might be the missing piece, it could be you're in eating disorder treatment and maybe you haven't talked about body image yet, or maybe you're a dietitian or a therapist and thinking like, what's something that somebody can do like alongside the work we're already doing and talk about in session? So that's kind of like where the idea came from.
So complementary to the work that we do with food. Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Hand in hand. Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link all the links in the show notes so you guys can check out her course and check her out on social media, all the places, and learn more and just fill up your feed with good stuff, right?
Exactly.
So we'll be sure to link to all the links in the show notes. So be sure to check that out. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a screenshot, tag Crystal on Instagram. And yeah, thank you so much. This is such a joy.
Thank you. It was a blast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.